Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Good evening. This is the Arsenal Fan Show on Love Sport. I am Matt Beadle, joined by the guy for the second week running from Gunners Town, Giles Anyam. How are you, Giles?
Good evening, sir. I'm doing well. Yourself?
Yes, very well, thank you. Yeah. Very well indeed. Remember, if you'd like to get in touch with us and speak to Giles, you can easily do that. 0208 7020 558. You can WhatsApp us on that number as well. Or you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. Just a reminder that there is a game on this evening. Of course, England are in Sofia playing Bulgaria, desperate to get a victory after that defeat, of course, to the Czech Republic, who, by the way, as a side note, are losing at home 3-0 to Northern Ireland this evening. So I'm sure there will be plenty of backlash on that one. And just a very quick bit of news, that a British man has died in Sofia before the clash this evening. The Foreign and Commonwealth Office said it was supporting the family of a British man who died following an incident in Sofia. As soon as we get any more news on that, we will report it here on Love Sport. And we will be doing live updates from the game as well that kicks off in around 45 minutes or so. Giles, we're going to read out the starting lineup to the England side that are playing in Bulgaria this evening. And mate, there's not an Arsenal player in it.
No, there isn't. It's we've kind of gotten used to that over the recent years. Just, you know, for one reason or another, we haven't produced any England quality players, or, you know, it's been like that for the last few years. But we've got players in the under 21s coming through. We've got Willock and Nketiah, who played last week. Nelson's also there. So, you know, and Gareth Southgate made a mention of Bukayo Saka the other day. So he's one to watch for the future. So hopefully we'll be able to add to the list that ended with Jack Wilshere, I think was the last Arsenal player.
Is that the last one, was it?
I think so. I could be wrong, but I think that was the last one.
Well, the lineup is Jordan Pickford, Kieran Trippier, Tyrone Mings making his debut, of course, this evening in place of Michael Keane, Harry Maguire alongside him in the centre of defence, Ben Chilwell at left back, Jordan Henderson, Harry Winks, Ross Barkley, Raheem Sterling, Harry Kane and Marcus Rashford. So, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one, isn't it? The good thing is that with the youth available to Unai Emery this season and those players coming through, you'd like to think it's only a matter of time before Arsenal being represented in an England shirt again.
Well, one thing we've seen with Gareth Southgate, for whatever faults and flaws he's got, he does like to promote from the youth. He's got no problem, you know, bringing guys up through the ranks. He's done that. When he came up through the England, from the England 21, under 21s, he brought a couple of boys with him. So, you know, if the boys at Arsenal can continue to show form, and before, I'm sure it's not too long before they will get a chance in the England white.
Elsewhere on the international scene, of course, Lucas Torreira has been in action for Uruguay. Say Kolasinac, he played the full 90 minutes for Bosnia. They beat Finland 4-1. Dani Ceballos, of course, played 64 minutes for Spain. Interestingly, some quotes as well that were picked up from Ceballos when asked about whether he missed playing for Real Madrid or missed being in the setup. And he was quite candid in what he said, his response to that. He said that he didn't miss Madrid and basically gave quite an indication that he was happy in the Premier League. And whether that's a thinly veiled dig at Zinedine Zidane, you don't know, because those two quite clearly don't get on. But from an Arsenal perspective, sounds good.
Yeah, but he also said his future, he does see his future back in Madrid. So, you know, let's see how that one pans out. I mean, he's happy to be getting first team football here. Obviously, things haven't gone too well with Zinedine Zidane. But let's see how that pans out. Maybe he's thinking that Zidane might not be here this time next season. So, you know, let's see.
Absolutely. And one more name, Nicola Pepe.
Scored.
He did indeed score. Now, let's not take anything away from that finish.
No, but, yeah.
A tap in. However, off the mark. So I know he's off the mark for Arsenal. But sometimes when players go back to their home comforts, as it were, in familiar surroundings, they basically come back a better player, can you say that?
More confident.
Yeah.
You know, feel good factor. Let's hope so. I saw a lot of people, I saw the goal, but a lot of people going on about how Zaha really, you know, set him up and, you know, will we go back in for Zaha and whatnot. But I think we'll come on to David Ornstein's quotes a little later, but he said that Arsenal aren't planning to make any sort of swoop in the January transfer window.
Well, it would be baffling if they did, considering they spent £72 million on Nicola Pepe. And it's quite funny, isn't it, that the two of those play together when you think about it.
And they get on very well.
Yeah, considering all the speculation in the summer. A player who didn't turn out for his country yesterday was Kieran Tierney. However, Scotland, of course, did win 6-0. And on yesterday's fans forum, our very own Dave Seeger, of course, spoke to Stamford Chidge and Gavin Williams from the Scotland Football Podcast, who apparently believes that Tierney has got more in his locker than Scotland captain Andrew Robertson.
In the last sort of few weeks, I've actually been thinking that for Scotland, actually, Kieran Tierney is a better fit than Andy Robertson.
He's captain, though, isn't he, Robertson?
Yeah, he's captain, but I would still have Kieran Tierney starting most games ahead of Robertson. And the reason for that is exactly what I sort of mentioned earlier, is that Tierney gives you a much better defensive performance than Andy Robertson does. Kieran Tierney also has more of a leadership, more of the leadership qualities than Andy Robertson has, in my opinion.
Wow.
Which, again, is definitely a...
Can't wait to see him playing for Arsenal every week then.
Interesting stuff that, isn't it? I mean, Andrew Robertson, who is arguably been one of the best left-backs in Europe over the past season or so, you know, came to Liverpool for £8 million from Hull. Everybody at the time not derided that move, but everyone thought, crikey.
And he took a bit of time to oust Moreno from that position.
He did,
as well.
Yeah. So, they bedded him in, but that was over a long period of scouting. Around 10 months or so, Liverpool had been taking a look on Andrew Robertson. Alongside Trent Alexander-Arnold, you know, you've got two of the best full-backs in the Premier League.
Amongst Europe as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. But for a Scottish journo to come out and say he thinks, and that he's not a Celtic supporter or anything.
No, he's not. Yeah, he's impartial.
To come out and say that he thinks Tierney offers more, it's quite telling.
Yeah, especially he was saying, especially in the defensive sense as well as attacking, he's much more secure, he's much more assured in a defensive sense. And he was saying that he would rather see, I think Dave's point was he would they toyed with the option of playing Robertson further forward and Tierney in left back, and he was like, no, Tierney left back, because we've got Christie or somebody, Ryan Christie or whoever it is that plays the left, they've got a lot of left footers, but basically Tierney off. And remember, Tierney from a young age, he's really sort of like shown those leadership qualities. I think at Celtic he was sort of like earmarked as maybe Scott Brown's successor at Parkhead. So we've brought in somebody not only good, you know, on the ball, on the field, he's actually got leadership qualities off of it. So, yeah, if he can oust Andy Robertson, it'd be great. You know, another thing is Andy Robertson, he doesn't strike me as a sort of a leader. He's kind of, he's a great footballer, but at Hull, I didn't see anything. No one ever mentioned him being sort of like, anybody sort of with that kind of leadership potential. And at Liverpool also, I don't see him much as a leader. So is he a leader in terms of what he does on the pitch? Like when we used to give people like David Beckham and Alan Shearer the armband because of what they did on the pitch, rather than sort of being a galvaniser. I don't know. But, you know, Tierney seems to have those natural qualities. So
it's interesting, isn't it? Sometimes you think they give an armband to someone because they play for a club like Liverpool or Manchester United or Arsenal. And in this sense, Andrew Robertson, what I would say is that he's a true professional. Mm. He seems very much like that, committed 100% every game. So perhaps that is why. This is, of course, the last round of international games before the weekend when Premier League football returns. And I don't know whether I'm happy about being happy about that, but football fans generally are. You're very much looking forward to the international break, are you?
Absolutely. International break it's just become I suppose to most point fans, it's kind of pointless, really, because it's...
well, it involves qualification for a major European tournament.
But some of them, like in March, you've got friendlies, or in November, there's another round of friendlies. In August, there's a round of friendlies. I mean, why? You know, we want to get on with the football. That's what we're here for. We want to get on with the domestic football. I mean, qualifiers, fine. You know, you have qualifiers, but all these... Nations League and friendlies and whatnot, and all these money making schemes by these FAs to sort of like, you know, fleece fans of money. We just want to watch proper football.
Want to watch proper football. And someone else who wants to do that is our very own Charlie East, who I believe is on the line right now. Charlie, you are missed, my friend. Talk to me.
Good evening, guys. How are you?
How you doing, mate?
I miss you too as well.
Mate, the international break is nearly over. Premier League football is nearly back upon us.
International break is rubbish, mate. I really don't like it. Really, really don't like it. It's boring. It's predictable. I know England lost the other night, but realistically, you know what teams are going to qualify. And all you've got to be worrying about is just which players are going to come back injured. That's what I look out for.
Charlie, and don't you think there's too many international breaks? Like all these friendlies in March, pointless games in March and August and whatnot.
Season already, mate. We've had August, one in September, October. We've got another one in November.
Exactly.
It's non-stop. It's like you play three league games and you've got an international break every week.
It does have to happen, Charlie, because come the summer, listen, are you one of those guys who come the summer, you are England through and through and you're buzzing?
Oh, yeah, I'll go out there. I've been to every World Cup in the
season. There you go.
Last 30 years, I've been to Brazil,
it's not, mate. I mean, those tournaments aren't just like toilet roll at home, mate. They don't just suddenly appear, you know. There's got to be a qualification tournament in order for the club, for the country to get there.
I understand that, but there should be some. I don't know. It can be done better. Mm. You don't need this many games to qualify. You really don't need a home and away league. Realistically, 99% of the time, the teams that qualify are the two seeded teams in the group, right? I know there's a breakthrough thing sometimes, but it's too many. I understand it does need doing, but international football, realistically, has taken a back foot from all the other stuff. It has the money, the financial, the European football. And ultimately, I know it's the great debate as well. I'd much rather see Arsenal win the Champions League than England win the World Cup. Hands down.
Sorry, hang on a sec, mate. I'm going to have to pull you up on that. You'd prefer to see Arsenal win the Champions League than England to win the World Cup?
You know what?
That is 1,000,000%.
Over the last, I don't know, 10 years or so, I've seen a lot of people, you know, are much more interested in their club football team than international football.
Really?
Yeah, they'd rather their own side, their club team, win something over their national team.
Probably about £10,000 to £15,000 a year going to watch Arsenal. I invest my time, my effort, my energy into it completely. Arsenal all day, every day for me, mate. As much as I love England, I want England to do well, and you can watch it with all your mates. Yeah. There's too many Tottenham players in the England team for my liking. I can't fully get behind that because of that either.
Do you know what? I know this is the Arsenal fan show, but I'm just going to dwell on this point for a little bit because I understand, right? I understand where you're both coming from, and I understand that you plough a lot of your hard-earned cash into your club week in, week out. That is your bread and butter. But you say you go away to these tournaments. I went to Euro 20 in 2004. I went to the World Cup a couple of years later. I was out in 2016 in France. Saw the Wales game, actually, which was incredible. But if I'm not out there, I'm with my mates. And we are all as one supporting one team, which is rare. Because often when you have a group of mates, everybody supports different teams and there's a bit of needle and it's all a bit of fun and it's all a bit of banter. But when you are all striving for that common goal, I just don't know. When I've travelled and watched my country abroad, for me, that's not like anything else.
But Matt, don't you think there are too many friendlies? I mean, they've got this Nations League for Scotland can qualify for the Euro Champions, Euro 2020, if they kind of win their Euro
Nations League. Yeah, but that's not friendlies, is it? That's actually
if you're out, it's the top two. The top two go through. If you're out. You can't have a third or fourth place team who got beaten by Russia, who's still got a chance of qualifying. Yeah. That's a nonsense. And it's just a money-making scheme.
I absolutely agree with that. Yeah. I definitely agree with that. And friendlies, listen, they can be quite turgid and quite dour and boring. But what I'm basically focusing on is what you said, Charlie, in the sense of that you prefer to...
I generally stand by, mate. I mean, I get wrapped up in England craze, so to say. And I mean, don't get wrong. I mean, I was in Moscow in the semi-final we lost. I was there. I paid an absolute fortune for a ticket, right? And I went, and I was in Moscow and Russia. But when we lost, I was gutted. Yeah, I was. And, move on to, I can't wait for the Premier League season to start. Don't mean, one then one. Yet with Arsenal lose an FA Cup final.
Ooh.
Mate, that's with you all summer, mate.
Yeah.
It's heart-wrenching.
It? Yeah.
When we lost the Champions League final to Barcelona, all right, I was very upset, and the way it happened, there was more proud 10 men. And deep down, I'm sure every Arsenal fan thought, it's all right, we'll be back there again. It's fine. But since then, mate, Chelsea have won it, which is heartbreaking. Mm. Tottenham got to a Champions League final. If they would have won that, mate, we would never have been able to lift that down.
No.
Right? So it is all well and good about, everyone together, England. But for me personally, in a selfish sense, I want Arsenal to win the Champions League so I can be the one walking into work or walking home, and I'm the one who's got me head held on. I can take the mickey out of everyone else. Maybe it might be selfish, I don't know.
It is selfish. Oh, you have your right to be selfish, out, Charlie.
What's that, mate?
You have your right to be selfish, I think.
Well, exactly. I'm just so club orientated. Maybe I'm a bit too mad for Arsenal.
Do you remember in your dad's day? Did your dad have the same sort of way of thinking, or was he more sort of internationals and
I don't know. I think it's different eras. My dad always said too. Growing up, he said like he was a bit young for the '66 World Cup, but I think he got gripped by like the 1990 World Cup. Mm. I was too young for that at all. I was like 2 years old. That means I don't remember it. But he said he used to love sort of England, but that sort of. I think that team sort of gripped the nation, so to speak, didn't it? I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think Charles got a point there. I think it's generational we're talking. I mean, obviously, it sounds like you see it differently from Matt from
England
from
been
Charlie,
rubbish my whole life, really.
But I think I think more and more it's become a generational thing, whereas the younger generation is much more sort of club oriented, whereas before.
I completely understand your argument. I'm not saying there's a right or a wrong. I mean, that's the beauty of it. We get to debate it. But just to finish on this, when you said about, you know, you're saying that if England didn't win a World Cup final, you'd be like, oh, that's a shame, but we move on. If Arsenal didn't win a Champions League final, you'd be devastated. For me, it is the opposite. I think if my club side weren't to win a major final, yes, you're devastated and you're gutted, but you think, do you know what, we go again in a couple of months. When it's a World Cup or European Championships, you've got either 2 years or 4 years, however you want to look at it, you've got that long wait before you get to go again.
But it kind of does dissipate after a while, though, doesn't it?
It does dissipate, but you can't. In that instance, you think we are never going to get that chance again. Whereas in Arsenal's case, you think, well, do you know what? We're probably going to have a very similar squad in a few months' time, and we go again.
Yeah, but something else as well. Like I'd like to put to you. I know it's an Arsenal show, but for example, I'm going to say it lightly. I really, really, really don't like Dele Alli. Okay, I just don't like him as a footballer. I don't like him as a person. I don't like him because he's a Tottenham player, and it all comes with it. When he scores a goal for England, I can't even cheer that because he's got it. And I know it's a bit of a weird one, but I can't be against him the whole season and hope he sort of doesn't do well and so on, and then find myself cheering for him in the summer. I know it's a very strange debate, and my mind probably works differently to other people. But
mate, all that does is just show you've got strong morals, Charlie. There you go. You're not a hypocrite. There we go.
But it's rolled on Sheffield United on Monday, mate. That's what we're looking forward to.
That is what
a cold, wet, windy day at Bramall Lane. We know we're not going to get nothing up there.
Indeed. Well, mate, as much as I'd love to talk to you about that game, we do have to move on. Charlie East, it has been nothing but a pleasure talking England and Arsenal with you.
See you soon.
This is the Arsenal Fan Show on Love Sport. Plenty more coming up. Love Sport. This is the Arsenal Fan Show on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, here with Giles Anyam from Gunnerstown. England are due to play Bulgaria and Sofia shortly. Just a quick reminder of that starting lineup: Pickford, Trippier, Mings, Maguire, Chilwell, Henderson, Winks, Barkley, Sterling, Kane and Rashford. Will be giving you updates as and when that game kicks off and anything exciting or perhaps not so exciting happens in that one. Giles, we're going to move on to some more current issues and formation strategy tactics that Dave Seager has talked about with regards to Arsenal. But before we do that, just a very quick one, mate. Mm-hmm. Today is the 14th anniversary of what?
Well, I've got to think back. So it's 2004.
Nah, mate, no, it's actually, 2005. I'm wrong. The 24th anniversary. Right. This is a completely, utterly pointless.
Ian Wright, his goal.
Mate.
Yeah.
You pulled it out of the bag.
Yeah, Lukic, Leeds United, Ellen Road. Yeah, I know.
Holy crap. Was that somewhere on Twitter today?
No, I just know.
Get out of town.
One of my favourite ever players. Yeah.
You know that was on the 14th of October in 1995.
Yeah.
Wowzers.
Every year I go on about it, I tweet that. Every
Do
year.
You?
Yeah.
Oh, well, there we go. Yeah. Oh, mate, I love that.
When you said 12, 14, that's like, wow, 14 years ago.
Yeah, so I always get that wrong. My maths is absolutely awful. But yes, what a goal.
Yeah, what a goal. One of many great goals. Unrivaled, unparalleled scorers. In my opinion, Thierry Henry, best striker. Best finisher I've ever seen at Arsenal, in Arsenal shirt, Ian Wright, without a shadow of a doubt.
Really?
Best. Could do anything. Could do it all. And usually did. You know, George Graham said there was a structure, 10 men in the structure, and then he'd leave Ian Wright to do. He'd just say to them, get the ball to Ian Wright and let him fit. And he did it. I mean, he was such a massive character that I know Alan Smith in his biography said that he felt intimidated by him. You know, his whole game, his whole demeanour. changed because of Ian Wright's aura. He was, until Dennis Burkett came along, he was our one special player.
Yeah, intimidation was one of his tactics as well, wasn't it? I remember seeing an interview with, randomly, Barry Venison back in the day, but he was doing some punditry and they were asking him about what he thought of Ian Wright. They didn't really phrase the question as to be like, what do you make of Ian Wright the player? And he actually said, oh, I hate him. on the pitch, I absolutely hated him because he was like, he dredged up whatever he could about me, about my friends, family, whatever, just to unsettle me. And that was part of his tactic. Favourite player for you of all time? Is that Ian Wright?
Yeah, I'd say.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, there we go. Ian Wright, yeah, great goal. I remember, he's also spoken off that goal as well, hasn't he? Because, of course, he had prior knowledge of John Lukic being an ex-Arsenal goalkeeper, knew exactly what he was going to be doing. Yeah. 24 years since that goal at Elm Road, which Giles Anyam knew all about. So there we go. He's caught me on the hop there. In yesterday's fans forum with Dave Seager, our very own Dave Seager, and Dave Chidgey, they were discussing Arsenal and Chelsea. Of course, Dave is a massive Chelsea fan, but they got onto the topic of Arsenal. And Dave alluded to the fact that maybe Unai Emery just chucks all his best players on the pitch at once and adopts more of a 4-3-3 approach with Alexandre Lacazette taking up the Roberto Firmino role.
So we've been panned for leaking goals.
Yeah.
And I think our first choice back four has Holding, Bellerin and Tierney in it.
Yeah.
That hasn't happened one league game this season yet. So, in fact, none of those three have started a league game.
Yeah.
So, you know, after the international break, we could well have those three players plus one of Luiz and Socrates as a back four. Now, not only does that make our back four much stronger, and I was very interested to hear Gavin's views on Kieran Tierney, obviously delighted to listen to that from someone who's watched him a lot more than I have, that not only does it make us stronger defensively, I think the question is, and I think I said to you off air, if the template he's working to is the Liverpool template, which looks like it might be, with a 4-3-3, and everyone's saying, oh, where's Ozil? There's no creativity. There's no link play to the strikers. We've got these three great players up front, and there's no link play. And I look at Liverpool, and I think, where's the exciting link play from Henderson, Fabinho and Wijnaldum? There isn't any. The overlap and the link play and the attacking stuff comes from the fullbacks. So when you've got Bellerin and Tierney, that's a lot different to Maitland-Niles and Kolasinac in quality. So I'm waiting to see what happens when that's the team. And if that doesn't work, then I'll start asking serious questions.
Interesting stuff from Dave Seager there, who's basically suggesting that it's more about getting your fullbacks in order, those ducks in a row, in order to play the attacking football that Arsenal could potentially play. I'm not going to say that you're going to emulate Liverpool exactly, but there's kind of a model there when you think of, like we mentioned earlier, Andrew Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold, that Arsenal, once you get Bellerin and Tierney in full throttle, could well be the same.
Well, just to add to Dave's notion, before Bellerin went down injured, he was right up there with Trent Arnold and Robertson for assists and current chances created before he went down injured. Was it January or November? I can't remember. And if you add Tierney to that mix now, I said, you know, when we signed Tierney, I think in the next 18 months, we've got two fullbacks who will rival the Liverpool duo, you know, because they have that modern way of playing. Whether we will model our style on Liverpool, I don't know, because Liverpool don't have any real playmakers in their team. Especially in the midfield. Up front, I don't think Lacazette can play. I don't think Lacazette really is that kind of Firmino player. Lacazette will offer himself to the team, but he wants to score. I think Firmino doesn't mind whether he scores or not. I think Lacazette is sort of like reluctantly kind of given Aubameyang the alpha male role, you know. But I don't know if he can do exactly what Firmino does. Let's see. I don't know. I'm not even sure that's the best formation for us.
Really?
Yeah, because, you know, Torreira likes playing in a double pivot. He played for Uruguay. Best player in the game in a double pivot. He plays most of his games, you know, his best games for Uruguay and previously at Sampdoria in a double pivot. We're playing him forward, you know, with Xhaka at the base. I'm not sure that's getting the best out of him. I'm not sure he's getting the best out of Xhaka, you know. So I don't know. Let's see. I'm not sure he's going to go with a 4-3-3. I think he might revert back to 4-2-3-1.
Interesting. Well, it does. I kind of said this from the outset that for me, it all feels like Arsenal fans just needing a little bit of patience in order for Emery's team that he wanted to develop in the summer to all come back firing fully fit. And I think when Tierney and Bellerin do come back, as Dave Seager has said, it could be a completely different ball game for Arsenal. However, Dave Seager did also say that he's not entirely sure that Unai Emery will be at the club next season. We've got some audio for that. I'm just waiting for our producer just to line it up. But on that note, Giles, yeah, Dave doesn't think that Unai Emery will be at the club next season.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear that. You know, the fan base, as David Ornstein said, the fan base, in terms of the fan base, he's walking a tightrope. You know, his support kind of lurches from one result to another. You know, his credit lurches from one result to another. So if we, you know, if we have suffered a defeat or a poor game, you know, people come on and they pan him. If he wins, then obviously supporters come out of the woodwork and whatnot. So, in terms of the club, it seems like they're happy with him. They're content with him. They know it's a long road, you know, and he's what he's trying to implement is going to take time to work to come to fruition. But the fan base are a different kettle of fish, and as we've seen, you know, fan bases can be very influential. You know, whether they can influence Raul and the executive team, I don't know. But if we don't get top four, it'll be interesting to see where the club goes.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of Emery getting those players ready to go, in terms of him getting all his ducks in a row, we've now got ours. Here is the audio from Dave.
My current guesswork is he probably won't be. You know, there's a break clause in his contract at the end of the season.
You don't think he'll be here?
I personally don't think he'll be here next year.
Wow, because he's a good manager, mate. I'm astonished by that.
Well, we're used to a style now, and I'm willing to be backing of a pragmatic manager that gets us 3 points for a while. But I think if we had an average squad, like George Graham latterly had an average, you know, that average squad, and we were getting results, people would accept it. But when you've got the quality of players that we've spent money on the last few years, I think the fan base expects slightly more flair and aggression and panache.
Panache, says Dave Seager. We're going to get into that and a David Ornstein Q&A that he's done today all about Arsenal later on the Arsenal Fan Show on Love Sport.
Love Sport.
This is the Arsenal Fan Show on Love Sport. Myself, Matt Beadle here, joined by Giles Anyam from Gunnerstown. We heard from Dave Seager before the ads and he thinks he's not sure entirely whether Unai Emery will be in charge at Arsenal next season. His reason for that being that he's got a good squad. Unlike what George Graham had, is what he referenced back in the day, and you know, didn't have a great squad to deal with at Arsenal. Unai Emery, on the other side of it, does have a very good squad. And he thinks if he doesn't get the best out of that squad, Emery could be on his way out. What do you think, John?
I think, as I said before the break, that there's a growing feeling amongst the Arsenal fan base that he's not getting the answers from this squad. You know, it's a talented squad. And we just, you know, the results are coming. We've only lost once this season in the league. But in terms of performances-wise, and you know, the manner of the performances are not really great. And I think a lot of people are thinking if he doesn't get us in the top four, then he should leave. So I'm not surprised, you know. It's a results business. And, you know, he had the first year to get used to the league, to the players, to the squad, to the system, whatever. Get his systems in place, and a lot of people are now thinking, well, if you don't, then you're off. But like I said, now there's conjecture about the length of his contract. So, you know,
indeed there is. Well, we're going to get onto that. Like I said, there is a Q&A today from David Ornstein, of course, a very respected Arsenal journo. Tends to come out with the stuff that Arsenal fans are in favour of. Would you say?
Well, they don't call him. He's got loads of nicknames, David Ornstein, but he's the king of Arsenal info. Well, a name like Ornstein, you can imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. On the line now, we've got fellow Gunnerstown alumni, Paul from Gunnerstown. Paul Hepke, Invinciblog, of course, of Gunnerstown. How are you doing, Paul?
I'm well, thank you. How are you doing?
Yeah,
you doing,
very good, mate. Great to have you on. The South African branch of Gunnerstown.
Yeah, the South African branch. I just came back from Zululand. I had a crazy weekend out there, and so I'm recovering.
You sound a bit hoarse.
Yeah, a little bit. It was a late night singing, lots of whiskey, and I'm surrounded by Zulus, and I don't speak Zulu, so I was just, kind of chipping in when I could and trying to catch a thread of what was going on.
I've got to say, this show's going here, there, and everywhere this evening. Paul,
we
were just having
keep still here in Love Sport, right?
We were just having a debate there about Unai Emery and his future at the club. Dave Seeger, in particular, thinks that he may not be there next season. Giles is kind of somewhere in the middle, I suppose. What's your take on this one?
I hope he isn't, but
really?
I'm not sure who would replace him. Yeah, I'm really not enjoying. I haven't enjoyed these last 2 years, to be honest. And you know, it's hard to, you know, to see that we did relatively well last year. I mean, Europa League final, 1 point off of fourth. We should basically have been third. You know, I think we kind of blew it towards the end, and we could have been 6 or 7 clear of Tottenham. So that said, you look at the results and you go, oh, okay, so it's just 3 points and it's the championship final. But then you go and lose like we did to Chelsea. You know, you blow the season kind of playing football. You go, what the hell is going on? You know, it's not enjoyable. And this season, I'm sorry to say, kind of feels more of the same. You know, we had that crazy 22-game unbeaten run last year. And, you know, we may be on the same path now, but it's just not convincing. I'm sorry, it makes me question why do I support Arsenal? I suppose that's the question that everyone has to ask themselves when they're asked this question. Because people say, well, how can you be unhappy when your team's doing so well or the results were more important? But I think just, you know, it's like choosing a car or a flavour of ice cream or, you know, like there's an Arsenal way of doing things, and the kind of football that Arsenal plays, that I've seen them play, is the kind of football that I like watching, and I'm not seeing it. And so that's what it is. I mean, yes, I'll still eat the same ice cream and I'll still drive the same car, but I'm not enjoying it like I
what's
before.
The reaction,
so does that
like
answer
on
your question?
What's the reaction on Gunners Town? Like, obviously Gunners Town kind of, you know, it's read by loads and thousands of people. And what's the kind of response you guys get on Gunners Town?
I'd say that, you know, kind of the opinion that I've just expressed is maybe 60 to 70%. Obviously, the people that write and blog are more likely to have an opinion. And to have an opinion, generally, you stick your head above the parapet and say something contrary or interesting. So I think that, you know, the people that I'm hanging out with on Gunners Town are more likely to tend towards being critical. You know, it's kind of what we do, I think, as Arsenal bloggers and, you know, Twitter accounts, people that are very active. I think that we're more engaged with our enjoyment or, you know, with our with football and with Arsenal in particular. I think some people are, you know, are more prepared to just accept it as a spectacle, something that they're not part of or that they can't change. And so just sit back and support your club and cheer loudly, you know. It's a dilemma, you know, because we get this question all the time. And I think, sorry to answer your question, I think majority of the Gunners Town writers that I know have this sense of dis-ease, you know, or unease, that there's something just not quite right, you know. Something's broken. I'm not sure what it is. So.
Great, Paul. We are going to
maybe
talk...
I'm broken.
We're going to talk more about this Ornstein Q&A because plenty of fascinating stuff to come on Love Sport.
Love Sport.
This is the Arsenal Fan Show on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with Giles Anyam and Paul, our South African Gunners Town rep, as well on the line. Now, I have referenced this David Ornstein Q&A that he's done with The Athletic today, and we're now discussing Unai Emery and whether he should be at the club next season, and indeed whether we think he'll be at the club next season. And I just want to touch on a couple of the questions that Ornstein was asked regarding Emery's contract. And it's quite interesting because his info that he gave was that Emery signed a 3-year contract with no break clause. However, the Times have said there is a break clause after the second season. Now, add to this the news that Ornstein has said the club are very content with Emery. They feel this work will take time to see fruition, obviously aware of what happened with Manchester United post-Fergie. Giles, it's conflicting information. It's difficult to kind of ascertain exactly what's going on.
Exactly. As I said, Ornstein's quite good with Arsenal information, and if the club are and the thing is, when you listen to people like Raul and Per Mertesacker and Edu, they do sort of have a joined up thinking. They all seem to be on the same page, and You know, I don't know how fans are going to take this, you know, if they see him still in position next season, whether or not we get top four, because I think the other day Raul said that, look, it's not dependent. It's not actually, we expect top four, but his job is not dependent on whether we get top four or not. So, you know, I don't know how fans will take this, but yeah, it seems like the club are ready to sort of like see, let his work sort of like, you know, bear fruit and see where it goes, rather than chopping and changing, as they've said. Reference Man United has sort of changed every 2 years. Again, they're even in a worse position than they were, you know, before. So,
Paul, another one that's going to certainly not delight Arsenal fans, because this is something that to me is reminiscent very much of the Arsene Wenger era. And I lost patience with Arsene Wenger saying, oh, do you know what? We could have signed Zlatan before he went to X, Y, and Z. Do you know what? We could have signed Ronaldo before he went to Manchester United. And my comeback on that one was, well, you didn't. You didn't sign them. So actually, you're making yourself look worse because you decided not to sign a player that you probably should have signed. And David Ornstein has come out with the info that Arsenal could have signed Antoine Griezmann in 2017 had Arsenal got Champions League football. They were also very, very interested in Virgil van Dijk as far back as 2015. What do you make of that?
Yeah, these could have, should have. You know, if you look at the list of people that we were linked to, and, you know, that wanted to play for us. I mean, the Griezmann thing, it's sad because I think we also missed that by 1 point, right? We were 1 point off Champions League. I think we have been here for the last two seasons. So, you know, 1 point makes a big difference, which is why VAR really irritates me because, you know, it doesn't really help. It still manages to get stuff wrong. Yeah. And those points, they all matter, you know, because they could change the trajectory and the of a club, you know, so drastically.
Funny enough, Paul.
So each point matters. Yeah, sorry.
Funny enough, we could have got him associated before he even went to Atletico, but apparently StatDNA said that he wasn't worth the money. So,
well, I don't know how I would have felt if we had signed him, because I was there in that game when they beat us. Did they draw with us or something?
They drew with us at home and we lost them away, yeah, with him.
And he did his little clam dance with the
Fortnite, yeah.
You know, and if I'd been a sniper, I probably would have been, you know, sorely tempted. It's just one of those obnoxious, annoying things that certain players do that just... Oh. Anyway, but he's amazing. I rate him highly. It's sad to miss out on these players, but it happens so much. I mean, I think, you know, every club has claims to, you know, to getting somebody early, or if they've identified a player early or coming really close. It's, I don't really hold too much. I don't invest too much emotion in the transfer window stuff because, you know, and this Ornstein interview that you're talking about, he talks about the Arteta transfer from Everton and how that almost fell apart in the last day. In fact, he actually had announced that it was over, because Arsenal had faxed through an agreement that wasn't what Everton and Arteta had agreed to. And so they just said, it's not going to happen. And so there were frantic phone calls or faxes, and Arsenal promised that they would rectify it, you know, after deadline day transpired, they would make it right, you know. And Arteta and Everton took a chance on that happening, and so we got Arteta at the time. But I just think that there's so much that can go wrong, you know, at the last minute. And what is the saying? Until you see them on the pitch with the, you know, the Arsenal shirts in their hands,
Absolutely. Well, as of next week, we are going to see Arsenal players with those shirts on again. Just before you go, it's been great having you on. Next week, Sheffield United back to winning ways for Arsenal.
I hope so. Like Charlie said, I think it's going to be a tough game. But I think they're better away, right, than at home. So. And we're better at home than away, so I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
I'll let you sit on the fence on that one, Paul. Mate, thank you for joining us. It's been great. That was Paul from Gunnerstown. This is the Arsenal Fan Show on Love Sport.
Love Sport.
This is the Arsenal Fan Show on Love Sport. I'm Matt Beadle, joined by Giles Anyam from Gunnerstown. Right, England have kicked off in Sofia. It is currently 0-0. We'll bring you updates on that game throughout the evening. I'm with you through to 11 p.m. so we'll be seeing that game right through. But after this, we will turn our attentions, of course, back to the Premier League. And Arsenal visit Bramall Lane next Monday, Giles, to play Sheffield United, who, to be fair, have been better on the road than they have been on home turf this season. Before we get into that game, let's just look back at some of the fixtures of years gone by. Now, ones to stick out for me, firstly, the game, the last time that Sheffield United were in the Premier League was the clash at Bramall Lane. And Phil Jagielka had to go in goal because Paddy Kenny was sent off in the was injured in the 61st minute. Sheffield United did not have a substitute goalkeeper on the bench. Jagielka took the gloves, had the game of his life, mate. And Arsenal failed to score. Yeah. Best part of 40 minutes. Yeah. Do you remember that one?
I'll try not to.
But incredible, wasn't it, at the time? I mean, one of those brilliant December fixtures just before New Year. And
banter era.
The what? Yeah.
The banter era.
Is that what you call it?
Yeah, it's probably the one that started. That's 2006
going into 2007.
That started the banter era.
Well, first season.
Of the banter era. Yeah.
It's like WWE, like the Attitude Era, the banter era.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that one was a particularly interesting clash when I think of others on neutral ground. Of course, the FA Cup semi-final, 2002-03.
Seaman save. One of the greatest ever.
One of the greatest ever. That's what it's been labelled as.
Yeah, brilliant save. I mean, gosh. You know, and the thing is, I remember that game, I remember thinking, we're going to tonk this lot. You know what I mean? And it was quite a struggle. You know, it's quite a tough game. But also, another famous one was the FA Cup fifth round match when Kanu didn't conduct himself in a gentlemanly fashion.
Didn't know the rules.
Didn't know the rules.
Association football.
A bit of gamesmanship. We went up and scored. And then, but to his credit, Wenger did offer them a rematch.
He did. Yeah, well, so. I mean, obviously, it was at Highbury. And I understand Kanu going after the ball and perhaps being slightly confused. I get that 100%. It was Mark Overmars who then responded to it and sprinted in the area to pick up the
cross. You play to the whistle, though, Matt.
I know, but...
You're taught to play to the whistle.
But every player should surely have then turned around and gone, and Wanko, just pass it back, just give it back to the keeper. But Overmars sprinted.
He's got his mind on the game. Not everyone can be Paolo Di Canio and catch the ball when he knows he's not going to score and get a game, Spirit of the Game award or whatever. No, Overmars is a killer. Play to the whistle. You know, so I'm sorry, Sheffield United fans, but it is what it is, you know.
Kaba Diawara started up front for Arsenal that day.
Kaba Diawara.
There's a name from the past. Bennett, yeah. But yes, of course, Steve Bruce then hauled his players off, and Wenger, in the post-match interview, offered to replay the game. And of course, it happened, and it was the same outcome. 2-1.
There you go. It ends well.
And it is 1-0 in Sofia. Marcus Rashford, who has received a bit of criticism this season, shall we say, for his finishing prowess, has scored in Bulgaria. When we see a slow motion replay of that, we'll give you a bit more detail. An absolute cracker of a strike from Marcus Rashford. That is Bulgaria 0, England 1. We, of course, did see this against Czech Republic when a certain Spurs striker slotted home a penalty. Just seeing the replay now, Ross Barkley is on the ball. Rashford is in the left-hand side of the box. He receives it from Ross Barkley, cuts, goes down the wing on the left, cuts inside with a Cruyff and absolutely rasps it in from quite a very tight angle. Great goal
from
Marcus Rashford. The keeper has tapped it onto the bar and it's crashed into the back of the net. So that is Bulgaria 0, England 1. Beans. Says Giles Anyan. Bins or beans?
Bins.
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 Bins. Or beans would be appropriate because that's what Jesse Lingard calls him.
I'm not into Man United.
Beans. Well, no, that was when they're away. We are focusing, of course, on Arsenal. We're going to finish with our nostalgia. Now, of course, the last meeting was in 2008. Arsenal 6, Sheffield United 0 on that occasion.
If I remember, was that the kind of... I know Carlos Vela scored a good few goals, and I'm wondering if he scored a goal in that match.
He scored three,
there you
my
go.
Friend.
There you
he
go.
Scored three. Nicholas Bentner bagged a brace, and
Lord
Jack
Bentner.
Wilshere with the other.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
But moving our attentions to this clash on Monday, of course, it will be live on Sky Sports. Bramall Lane, not the easiest place to go to, as we saw with Liverpool a couple of weeks ago. They managed to scrape the victory, quite fortunately so. Gini Wijnaldum's shot bundling under the body of Dean Henderson. But how do you see this one going, mate?
I know if Dave was here, he'd be like, it'd be all positivity and whatnot, positive energy, and we're going to go out there and win. And me and Chris, I've sort of like, I don't know, I haven't been hanging around with Chris for too long, and I don't know. We should win, but if we get out with a draw, what can we expect? I'm being honest, Matt, you know, away from home, we've not been great, you know. And I know that, you know, Sheffield United's home form isn't that great, but, you know, they'll be up for it, man. They'll be up for it. And I wonder, will we be up for it? Who's coming back from the international break? Who's going to be ready? Who's going to be fit? Are they going to be in form? You know, Sheffield United probably don't have that many players away at internationals. They've probably got these 2 weeks to really focus on the tactics and whatnot. And I don't know.
God, crikey.
Yeah, I know.
Do you know what? It really surprises me. And I know I get a bit of stick for this on the show, but it does surprise me that there is that sort of downbeat attitude generally on this show. And you're right about the away form. Only one win on the road this season, of course, that opening day against Newcastle.
That was a struggle.
Yeah, I suppose that was a bit of a struggle. But I don't know. It feels like it's not that bad at the moment. And like Dave alluded to earlier, once those players get back to fitness and once that back line is sorted, we could see an entirely new Arsenal.
You know what? I think it's more than just the back line, though. I think everyone's sort of focusing on, look, Holding wasn't a regular, but everyone seems to think it's Bobby Moore. You know,
it's difficult.
Tierney's just coming back. Bellerin's behind Tierney in terms of fitness. They're going to have at least 3, 4, 5 games before they get into the run of things. And then we have to sort out the system. And then we have to sort out the players that screen them. Because if them two are providing our width and being our version of Trent Arnold and Andrew Robertson, who's going to cover for them? You know, and it looks like Guendouzi is the shoo-in. He's like the number one first pick in midfield. Great as he is, you know, he's committed. He's forceful. He shows up and whatnot. He plays Xhaka as well. Xhaka isn't the greatest mover, you know. So I'm worried about our midfield. I don't think those three players coming in will solve overnight all our problems. I think it's deeper than that.
Well, that is, like you said, that's where your DCM, as it were, becomes a hugely important figure, because if you've got those players bombing on, and that's why I suppose Jordan Henderson is regarded as a very influential figure at Liverpool, because he does sit.
But no, it's Fabinho, isn't it? Fabinho sits and screens, you know, and Henderson and Ronaldo do the doggies. They're up and down.
Well, Henderson tries.
Yeah, Henderson tries. Yeah, but they're mentally switched on. They're grown men. They've been around the block. They know how the system.
And they're used to the system. Yeah, that's the problem.
Exactly.
Here.
They're used to it. We don't know what's going on. It looks like the players half the time don't know what's going on. You know, so I'm sorry. I mean, I would love to be more positive, but the current climate. We should win, but if we get out of a draw, we haven't lost.
Well, on that a hugely not so positive note, can you give me a score prediction at least, Giles?
Head says 1-1. Heart says 3-1 Arsenal.
Nice. Okay. Well, I'm going to finish it by saying that Arsenal are going to win 3-1 at Bramall Lane next Monday. We will give you all the reaction from that game as it is going on, of course, because the Arsenal fan show on Love Sport will return at 7 p.m. an hour before the game kicks off. We will see you next week.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.